Topic matter for this hour, Oregon can do better at making sure its children are healthy, safe, and in solid families. That is the basic essence of the recently released report, Status of Children 2014. It is an annual report from the organization Children First for Oregon, and while this most recent report shows some progress, it also shows Oregon lagging behind many other states on a number of measures. Tanya Hunt is the executive director at Children First for Oregon and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Thank you so much for joining us, Tanya.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Give us a little history, if you would, first on Children First for Oregon and then on the annual reports.
Sure. For the last 24 years, Children First for Oregon has been Oregon's statewide children's advocacy organization working on multiple issues of child well-being. And each year, the organization releases this report looking at how children are faring and how it compares to prior years and how it compares to other states or other trends.
All right. And overall, do you give a letter grade or anything like that for the status of children in Oregon?
Actually, we used to do a letter grade, but it got pretty depressing, so we stopped doing that. So now we simply want to report, we want to let the citizens of Oregon know where things stand for kids and let them be the judge of whether or not that is adequate, whether or not that is what we expect or what we want for kids in Oregon.
How depressing did it get? I mean, how low was that grade?
I think the year we were ready to issue a D was the year we said, maybe this isn't working.
And you run into the issue, too, where, of course, that's the thing that a lot of the media will pick up on, too, is Oregon gets a D, and at that point, people just kind of freak out and don't necessarily listen to the deeper numbers.
Exactly. Well, and we really want to be solution-focused, because the fact is these things are not intractable. They are not unsolvable. It's a matter of being well-informed and making good choices moving forward, and that's where we want the conversation to be.
There are three basic subject areas you deal with here, and would you explain what those are and why you chose these three general areas to look at?
Sure. Thanks for asking. So keeping children healthy is a really important baseline of what we expect for kids in Oregon, and I think we would all agree that making sure children are physically well, that they have access to health care and health insurance, and that certain minimum benchmarks are being addressed for their needs, like immunization, prenatal care, well-child checkups. Those kind of indicators are ones that we are watching closely to make sure that children are healthy. The second indicator or group of indicators we look at is to make sure kids are safe. And when we think about safe, we really think about if they're safe in the home, if they have a nurturing and supportive and safe home environment, free from abuse and neglect. And unfortunately, many of our kids are living in home environments where that is not the case for them. So we're looking there at indicators of abuse and neglect, domestic violence, substance abuse, mental health assessments for children who are coming into care, foster care numbers, which we know in Oregon are exceptionally high and is an area of concern for us. The third important area of child well-being we look at is really the economic stability of their families. And, of course, all of these issues are interdependent and related to each other. So when we think about child poverty and family economic stability, whether it's employment or housing costs or affordable child care, all of those are directly related to a child's health and safety. And so we're looking at those of community indicators of well-being as well.
So I want to come back to some of these individually then, because, for example, keeping children healthy, the very heading in this section says Oregon is still in the bottom half of states for health insurance coverage, up-to-date immunizations, and dental care access for children. It seems like in a state where a doctor is governor and the longest-serving governor at that, and there's been much said about health care changes in the state of Oregon, we might have been a bit ahead of this point.
It does seem like we should be, and I would say that Oregon has taken pride in its innovation around health care, health insurance coverage, and access to health care in the state. I think that pride may not always be well-rooted in some of the facts, or at least the latest facts, for children particularly. So many years ago, about 5 years ago, the state did make an important investment in getting children health insurance coverage, and we cut the number of kids without health insurance by half really quickly. It was an incredible success. That was 5 years ago. So since then, we've been a bit stalled. And what has happened is other states have caught up and surpassed us now in this area of health insurance coverage for children. We also see around access to health care, we want to believe that if children have insurance, that means that they can see a doctor when they need to and that they can have their preventive services that they should have. But we also know that across the state, there are large pockets of the regions that don't have ready access to providers, particularly providers who will accept that public insurance benefit.
All right. It's interesting to notice how quickly the numbers can get a little unclear here, because, for example, when we're looking at Oregon's rank in health insurance coverage for children, it's 30th. The rate of uninsured children, though, is down to 6.4%. Is that right?
That's right. So we're talking about a pretty, we're not talking about half of our kids being without uninsurance. And 5 years ago, we had 12% of our kids without health insurance, which was way too high. Again, we've made good progress. We've brought that down to 6% of our kids having health, not having health insurance. Other states, though, have done better. And I think the question for Oregon leaders is, how are they doing better? What are they doing that's making it easier for children to gain coverage, for children to retain that coverage once they have it, and for us to do strong outreach to families to let them know of the available coverage. So it does get murky quickly with the numbers, and 6% uninsured may seem like a low number, but if you think about what a barrier that is for kids being healthy and well, it's a pretty significant barrier when you have kids without health insurance.
Given what's going on then with the introduction of the Affordable Care Act, Tanya, do you think that there'll be a lot of wobble in these numbers for the next year or two, given that so many other states, have, like Kentucky, for example, probably ranked a bit lower than us in uninsured kids and is likely to zoom past us because of the fact that they have such a good Medicaid system? So is Oregon's rank in this chart likely to change a lot, and is Oregon going to see a lot more kids getting insured as a result of changes in health care insurance?
I think it is likely, first of all, that we will see, a huge shift in the landscape, obviously, regarding health insurance coverage. And then I think we also need to be looking for a shift in access to health care, because insurance without coverage without access to care does not equal health and well-being for kids. So we need to make sure we're watching both sides of that equation. But when it comes to coverage, there are going to be significant shifts in the landscape, as there already have been. And, I don't usually have a strong competitive streak, but I think we need to be challenging ourselves when we see other states surpassing us, doing better, states that we have traditionally been considered leaders of, and now we need to be willing to look to them, figure out what they're doing well, make it our own, and be able to do the best we can for our kids in Oregon.
Tanya Hunt is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's the executive director of the group Children First for Oregon, which recently put out its annual report, Status of Children. This is Status of Children 2014. It shows room for improvement, certainly, on keeping children healthy, keeping children safe, and strengthening families. You can join this discussion on the Jefferson Exchange. Our phone number today, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. You were just talking about the difference, though, Tanya, on keeping children healthy, about the difference between health insurance and access to care. So obviously they're not the same thing when you just characterize that. So what would be the situation in which a child would be insured but not have access to care?
So if a child has health insurance coverage, particularly public health insurance coverage through our Healthy Kids program here in Oregon, which is the Medicaid program for children, but they don't have providers in their community who accept that insurance, or who only accept so many clients with that insurance or so many patients with that insurance, you may find families, and we know this is the case, there are families who have to travel further and further to get access to providers who will accept Medicaid insurance because the reimbursements are incredibly low compared to private health insurance reimbursement. And also we find there are pockets of the state where there just simply are not enough providers. So it's not even a case of providers with limited caseloads for Medicaid patients, but you also just have regions of the state where there are not enough pediatricians, nurse practitioners, family practice physicians who will accept patients or who are accepting patients. And so families have to travel further. They're not getting in to see the doctor for their well-child checkups, for their immunizations. It's just one more barrier to health care for kids. We have found creative solutions to that, like school-based health centers, which make that really community-based, very accessible to the child and family and to the community. Those are not in most schools, and certainly there's room for expansion there.
So is this often an urban-rural kind of divide? It sounds like it certainly is in the Keeping Children Healthy segment, but in Keeping Children Safe and in Strengthening Families, do any of these really divide sharply along urban and rural boundaries?
You know, later in the year, we'll be doing a more regionalized and even county-level analysis of these indicators, looking at those differences. I have been looking at these numbers for years. There is absolutely regional differences across the state. Sometimes we see sectors of the state that are doing better in indicators. Perhaps more urban areas have access to better or to more healthcare options, but we may see higher rates of poverty or child welfare caseloads in more urban dense areas. In rural areas of the state, sometimes we see less access to services, less access to health care and other important safety net services. Often we see high rates of poverty, again, because of economic opportunities in rural parts of the state. I know that's certainly true in southern Oregon. But we may see other numbers, other issues or stressors reflected in our child welfare data, our child safety data. So there are differences, and I think if we really want to make significant improvements in these numbers for kids, we have to be willing to dive down at that level, take that closer look, and begin to kind of peel away the layers of this onion.
Within the Keeping Children Healthy category, there are some bullet points here about better care. Oregon has seen an 18% increase in well-child visits since 2008. Oregon's rate of children with up-to-date immunizations increased more than 14% between 2011 and 2012. I'm going to presume we'll probably see a further movement in that number, given that the legislature just made it a little harder to get the exemption for religious reasons for immunizations.
We may see that. I think, you know, making sure we're educating parents and that healthcare providers are involved in that education so that parents understand why well-child visits and immunizations are critical to protect children's health is a really important step forward in our state. I'm hoping that we will see improvements in that, not only because of greater public education and awareness, but also because we are increasing access to care and increasing our insurance coverage rates.
Tanya Hunt, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Executive Director at Children First for Oregon. We're talking about the annual report put out by Children First for Oregon. Status of Children 2014 is the latest edition. Out a couple of weeks, you can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, well, never mind, won't give that one because that's tied up with the pledge drive. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So moving on from keeping children healthy to the next key category, keeping children safe. And you'd already made reference to this, Tanya, about more children going into foster care in Oregon than nearly any other state. Total or per capita or some mixture?
Per capita, mm-hmm. As a percentage. Oregon, relative to its population, has a very high foster care placement rate. And children who enter foster care, on the whole, tend to stay in foster care much longer. And, in fact, we have a high rate of children who actually simply just age out of foster care. So they may enter foster care at the age of 8 or 10 or 12 because of family situations where they are not safe, they're not able to be cared for in their home, and the foster care system provides a critical, immediate safety net for those children to ensure that they can be cared for while family situations are being addressed and resolved, hopefully. But what we see in actuality is that a lot of those kids never make it back home. They never make it back home, nor do they make it into a permanent family situation of adoption or guardianship. And so that leaves a lot of kids really in a tough way to start their adult life. If you are leaving the foster care system at the age of 18 and don't have a family connection, you don't have a bio family or extended family, you know, it's hard to even imagine how these young people kind of make their way in the world when they're being launched with very little support systems around them.
But back to square one, why so many kids going into foster care in the first place? Are most of them coming from abuse or neglect situations where they're removed for their safety, or is it a case of like the parents are going off to prison and therefore won't be around to care for them?
You know, it's absolutely a mixed bag. We know that there are certain family stressors that are more prevalent for child welfare-involved families. Domestic violence is an important one. Drug and alcohol abuse that affects the safety and well-being of the children is certainly a leading cause of children entering the foster care system or the child welfare system. We also know that involvement with law enforcement is a factor, mental health, and many times family economic stressors are mixed up in that. we see most kids entering care today in Oregon, or most child welfare kind of founded cases, are for children who are in severely neglectful situations. They're simply not being cared for. Also cases of physical abuse, sexual assault of children. And I don't think anyone would argue that those are not okay and that we have to intervene. And then there's a third category called threat of harm. And that's where, you know, there's a judgment made by really, really incredibly hardworking professionals who look at these cases day in and day out. And those professionals are assessing that there is an imminent threat of harm, that this child is very unlikely to be safe. They might not have immediate signs of injury today, but they are in a situation that, you know, we would all kind of agree was not likely to end well or to be well safe for this child. So those are the categories or how we look at children entering care. There's a few others, but those are the primary ones. And each one of those has, you know, a mix of associated factors and risks that are very complex.
I'm aware of situations in Oregon where there's a child in foster care. Parents were never married. We're never really together. Dad says, kid caused a problem in my house. I don't want him. Mom says, he causes problems in my house. I don't want him. Judge says, okay, kid stays in foster care. Is that unusual? Is that unique to Oregon, or do we even know? I mean, and what's the prospect then for that child? Where does that child go?
So that, you know, there are lots of anecdotal kind of cases where it's hard to imagine how children end up in these situations, and it's hard to imagine how parents make some of the choices they do. And many times for those parents, it may not feel like a choice at the time. So when a child is not safe at home because either the parents are unable to care for them or unwilling to care for them, which is the case that you're describing, that is a really, really tough road for that child going forward. Now, best case scenario, we can offer as a state, as a community, we can offer services and support to help bring that family back together. so that there can be enough support for that child to be successful in the home, enough support for that family and that parent to be engaged in parenting, to be a successful parent, to address some of their underlying needs, whether it might be drug and alcohol issues or economic stressors or other stressors in the home that are getting in the way of their parenting. Those are, you know, our best case scenarios. When you don't have those best case scenarios, you have children who do end up languishing in foster care. And unfortunately, foster care is not a great place to grow up. I mean, it's wonderful if we could all imagine that foster care was the answer to this problem. You know, if it was just a question of taking kids out of one home and putting them in another, and now they're going to thrive. But in fact, the very act of going into foster care and being in foster care and the turmoil around that is deeply traumatic for kids.
All right, much more to talk about with Tanya Hunt. We'll have a few minutes left with her on the other side of a break. She's the executive director at Children First for Oregon, and we're talking about the status of Children 2014, recently released. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with your phone calls and emails and Tanya Hunt in a minute 10. Eight 36 on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. You can find us not just on the radio, but also at ijpr.org and jeffexchange.org online. We're also on Facebook, also on Twitter. We are talking to Tanya Hunt at Children First for Oregon about the status of Children 2014, which shows Oregon lagging in a couple of categories. The general categories, keeping children healthy, keeping children safe, and strengthening families. Room for improvement noted in all those areas. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 or by email at jx@jeffnet.org. This email from Wolfgang in Sunny Valley, Tanya, he has a number of questions. Why is the number of kids with health insurance coverage equated with health care? I think you indicated it's not. Second question, why is access to health care equated with health? Would a healthy child that we don't know about because he, she does not appear in any statistics not be just as healthy? And to what extent do your statistics assess the epidemic of psychotropic drugs doled out to teenagers? That, again, from Wolfgang in Sunny Valley.
Well, that was a lot of questions in one.
Right. So let's go to the access to healthcare equated with health. That seems to be the starting point there.
Yeah, you know, it is true that having access to care but not taking advantage of that healthcare access certainly doesn't benefit children or our communities. For the most part, when children, particularly young children, are growing up in homes with nurturing and caring parents, which, you know, the vast majority of parents are, they are eager to get kids to the doctor. They are eager to be assured, to be reassured that their children are well and are growing and are on a good developmental path. If they can't get to that doctor, if they can't get those well child checkups, those immunizations, there is risk of those children falling behind in health and in development. So we're not catching some things as early as we should. So access to care, coverage to care, access to care are the two big hurdles. But then, yes, parents absolutely then have to take advantage of both of those factors to get kids into care. So that we can assure kids are seeing doctors when they need to and healthcare providers.
One of Wolfgang's other questions is about a healthy child that we don't know about because he, she does not appear in any statistics. Would that child not be just as healthy? I guess the major root question there is where do you compile this information from?
There's multiple sources for the data that we are examining. They are federal or state sources. So it is true that children, for the most part, are being counted, or these data points are being collected through intersections with the system of care. So if a child never gets in to see a doctor, we may not know that they don't have their immunizations. They may be perfectly healthy, but they may not, and they are certainly at risk for some pretty dire health outcomes. without those immunizations. So a lot of these statistics are based on survey data or on hard data based on, you know, birth certificates or interaction with systems of care.
And is there any specific notice of detail where it concerns the administration? When he talks about psychotropic drugs, I assume he means things like Ritalin, Concerta, Strattera, Abilify, Zoloft, you name it.
Yeah. You know, we actually, Children First for Oregon has been looking at that issue specifically as for foster youth in the system because just like all youth who may be experiencing problems at home, problems in school, there can at times be a rush to medicate those issues. And certainly there are circumstances where medication is a lifesaver. It is the difference that can allow a child to be well and to be learning and to be successful. So we don't want to diminish that at all, but particularly for children in the foster care system who are experiencing a high level of trauma just simply by their life circumstances, and inevitably with children in trauma, there is this acting out that happens, and at times, particularly in foster care, it can be managed more quickly with medication. And so there can be this rush to judgment around, you know, gee, it doesn't seem like this child is doing well. Maybe they need medication. So we share that concern, and it's something worth watching. In fact, we sit on a statewide panel regarding psychotropic drugs for foster youth in the system to really examine that issue and to make sure that we are not over-medicating children in the foster care system.
All right, Tanya, before we go, I want to get back to the one of the figures that it seems like most of the news reports about status of children 2014 picked up on, which is that nearly a quarter of Oregon's children are living in poverty. That's in the Strengthening Families section of the report. So the actual number is 23%. Is that exceptionally high compared to the national average, to other states?
It is. It is not good compared to other states, that's for sure. And, you know, Oregon is 31st amongst all the states. We are below average amongst all the states. I don't think how we think of ourselves as Oregonians. I think that we expect better of ourselves. I think being ranked 31st does not reflect our values. I think that the economic recovery has been slow for certain part regions of the state and also certain low wage earners, which tend to be the younger wage earners, which tend to be our parents in the state. They are not having as much economic recovery, and we're seeing that in the child poverty rates. We're seeing that in the median family income, again, particularly in southern Oregon.
And what are the recommendations that are made by Children First for Oregon to try to shore that up to get some kids out of poverty?
There's a couple of factors. One, we have to be looking at economic opportunities for families, and that goes to job training, job creation, and creating those climates where job growth can happen in our communities. That's absolutely critical, and making sure that we have workers prepared for that job growth and ready to take on that on. But also, we have to think about the fact that when people do have interruptions in their income, they need a safety net. They need immediate resources. They need help getting out of those circumstances and moving up the wage ladder. So things like subsidies for child care, which allows parents to get back into the workforce. They have jobs. They have a job offer. But if they can't afford child care, that is going to keep them and their family at a lower income level and potentially even into poverty. So helping families move up that wage ladder by creating pathways out of poverty is critical, and we can do that with some public policies.
Which brings up the final question is, do you put a hard copy of this report into the hands of every one of the members of the Oregon legislature?
We absolutely do.
Had a feeling. Tanya Hunt is the executive director at Children First for Oregon. We're talking about the report status of Children 2014. Tanya, thanks so much for spending some extra time with us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey.
All right, great to have you.